we gotta go over the plans for the subdivision, so we'll probably got the car and go back.
Anybody wishing to address the planning and zoning board, you fill out a blue card, and you can address the board. And please turn off your cell phones, so we don't get interrupted. And first thing, I guess, may we have a roll call, please?
Present.
Present.
Councilmember Spurrier?
Here.
Councilmember Kelly is absent, and Chairman Bruce?
Here.
Attorney Arnold?
Here.
Manager Dredd is absent, and Alderman Spurrier is represented.
Here.
Okay, I'd like to call for the approval of the minutes of March 27th meeting. Do we have any discussion on that?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
We have a motion, do we have a second?
I'll second.
A motion and a second, may we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Rossi?
Yes.
Councilmember Haddock?
Yes.
Councilmember Spurrier?
Yes.
Chairman Bruce?
Yes. Okay, we're now open for public hearings, and I don't think we have any. And so, board business. We have the LDR interpretation, 2014-2 LDR interpretation. Again, 2014-02.
Typo.
Addition to the accessory building site with the approved plan site plan.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, as you know, we, every once in a while, our code allows for the planning director, development services director, to make interpretations of code of things that are not specific in the code. And after our last update of the land use code, we committed to council and to the P&Z board that whenever we do any of these interpretations that are not right there in the code, that we would bring them forth to the planning and zoning board and the council, just not really as to agree or just really for y'all to, if you have any issues, and the same with the council, to accept them. And then once they're accepted, they're basically in the book as part of the code. And this is a commonality with other communities. We've done it in the past, but I don't think ever before we formally wrote them up. So that's what we did. So anyways, this one came to me. We had a couple of, one actually was at the water plant. The other one was out at Unifix or Dashwell Gypsum, where they had an approved site plan, and they were adding an accessory building. They weren't impacting parking. They weren't acting any of the, you know, setbacks, anything like that. It's just when they originally did the site plan, Unifix was probably 87. The water plant was 2000, I think, 9. They didn't anticipate some of these extra little structures. So we have in our development code two levels of review. One is considered the minor development, which is projects that are under an acre in size, or buildings that are over 5,000 square feet, under 5,000 square feet. They're considered a minor development. They just go to staff. Then we have the major one that trips either one of those requirements, and is in size, or actually, or if you think it's, if we feel it's controversial from staff, and then that has to go for P&Z and to the council. So in some of these projects, and you've heard some discussion from some developers, that can drag out the process a little bit. And I understand until probably the 2000, every project went to P&Z and the council. But as the city grows and as more projects come, you have to kind of reevaluate. So we felt, staff felt that these minor, if you had an approved site plan and you were just adding an accessory building, it really was a minor development. Even though the size, Unifix's building is pretty large, but relative to the entire manufacturing facility, it's very small. It's kind of like a big flatbed in the back. And same thing with the water plant. I mean, it's a 10-acre site. Half of it's used for water, and we're talking a little storage building. So really, you know, but the site itself is 10 acres, so that would trip it over as a major development, even though the building they were adding is a little storage shed. So based on that, we made this interpretation so that we could move forward with these projects going to permitting, et cetera. So, and it went to the council just because we didn't have a meeting last week, but we felt that we wanted to bring it up to you just so you can also know. And council didn't have any issues either, so that's where it is. And these are the two, but and remember, when we do these interpretations, even though we do it for one project, it now would go forward to any other additional projects as it moves forward. Good idea. Thank you.
Yeah. Are they going to start doing something down there?
At which place? National Gypsum?
Gypsum.
They basically have, Julie might know more than I do, but basically behind the facility, they do the kind of boards they make. They needed it, it's a new patented facility that needs to stay out of the elements while it's curing, is what my understanding is. And now if you go behind, when you drive down Wildwood, you don't see anything. When you go behind there, which I was taken back there, they've got stacks of the boards that they make, which are their boards so you put in bathrooms, kind of a wall board, hardy board. And this is just a new product. And so, I mean, I think it's good for us because it's going to keep the plant going and things like that. But it's a pretty big size facility, but that's what they're doing there. And, you know, it basically, instead of it being out on flats, which is now the stuff, it's going to be in the little building. It's a new product.
That's good.
Yeah, so.
Good. But there's basically nothing else that we have to do?
No. It's just basically for information only. Yeah.
Do you have any discussion on that? Okay, then item number two. Update on the major special effect application for Green Cove Spring Dragway for events from June 6, 2014 to May 30, 2015.
Yep. The dragway has been in existence since September, October. And when we originally issued them a major special event application, the requirement was that they'd have to come back with a site plan approval. And the first thing we did is if you remember, in January, February, January board, we added motorsports as an existing land use to Reynolds Park. Hey, right here, why are you doing? And the requirement of the original condition was they have to come back and meet code. Well, in the meantime, they did that. They did the MURP, so we know that it is a continued use that could stay there, and that was a change they made. And then they came to staff, and they applied for a site plan permit, but it's still kind of a temporary facility. Oh, you signed the letter? Did you get? Oh, great. Thank you. Anyways, and so when we met with staff to kind of make a recommendation to you, and that was what we were going to have at your last meeting, we realized that they only have a 4-year lease, and that every year Reynolds can pull the plug if something better happens at Reynolds Park. They're not making any permanent facilities. They still use basically portalettes for restrooms. They wanted to add some lights because they want to do some night activities. Our code requires all our ground, our electric, all our utilities to be underground, which would be a substantial investment, which wouldn't be a problem if you're going to be there for a long time, but if you're only going to be there a couple of years, it's about a $50,000 difference, I think. And then things like parking, our parking requirements require every 10 spaces, you need a landscape island, and they're just kind of park people in primitive parking is the best way of saying it. I don't know, you know, just like kind of like you do at a ball field or things like that, it's not really permanent parking. So based on that, staff felt that really it's still a major special event. It's not a true development and as we go through the normal site plan, and our code does allow the special event. And so we decided that we felt, in talking to the city attorney, you know, a year would be, we can look at it every year and see where it's at. And if they end up doing any permanent facilities, then they need to start meeting our code, because then they are really a development. And the concern staff has is if we start giving exceptions for one development, then everybody said, well, why can't you do that for us? Why'd you do it for them, not us? So we felt that this was, you know, would be the better way of going. And Reynolds Park was happy. The developer, Pete Scalvo of the dragway, was also happy because he looks at himself as that. Plus, it's only a weekend operation. It's not every day. So this went to the council at their meeting back in May 15th, I think it was, the 17th, whatever, the second week in May, where they approved it as a special event. Normally, the special events don't come to you. They're not required by code, but we just wanted to kind of keep you in the loop because the whole, you had the land use issue come before you before, and that's really it. We told John Brad, who's representing the port, as well as Mr. Scalvo representing Green Cove Gravelway, this is something we want. It's good for the community. You know, and if it does get serious permanent, then we'll look at it, you know, again, but then they'll be ready to put more investment in it. But right now, you know, Reynolds Park is still looking at that long-term development, and so I don't think they really want to go into any long, make these commitments for that, you know, for that to move forward, so.
I've had people in camp ask me about the Greenfield Springs Dragway.
Yeah, they're supposedly having a big event on the 6th of June. That's why they're doing a bunch of these, that's why they need this electrical work done where it's going to be some night activities. And also, every one of their activities, only a couple hundred people. My understanding, I wrote out there with Mr. Scalvo and Mr. Brown, and, you know, it's like if you're a drifter, you're different than a dragway person, you're different than a mudballing person. I mean, it's just different type of people, and, you know, but I've heard people that come from all over to come here, so. So we just wanted to keep you in the loop on that, but so it goes.
Excuse me, did you make a note that Steve showed up at 7:05?
5:05. You were late, Steve.
Yeah.
I just have a question. I don't see anything listed here about liability insurance, and obviously I've never been out there, but I can only imagine it could get kind of scary
at times.
That's
between the port and the dragway, and I'm sure they have people sign limited liability. I have not been out there, but we're not liable because nothing, and I'll switch this to the attorney, it's not on public streets, and I'll let Jim go into it a little bit more.
We could be sued. That doesn't mean we have liability, and I don't think we have any liability at all. It's a private enterprise on private property. I can assure you from knowing the port as long as I have, they have a monster-sized insurance policy, and they probably have added a rider and required this owner to provide several million dollars worth of insurance for liability purposes because it is a dangerous activity, no question about it.
Yeah.
And I noticed that little fence light. Not permanent fence that they showed on one of these pictures. It didn't look like it was very stable. As far as if a truck or car or whatever they used started going toward the fence.
I mean, you hear about it in Daytona Speedway where they're very experienced. I understand.
Yep.
A lot of cases, like on the drag strip, the any type of barrier is only used for the first part. Because the last part is usually open field where they can go flying off if they have to. But according to this flat, you know, with the dirt track for motorcycles and supercross and for tractor pulls and a jeep climb with rocks and circular tracks for, it looks like it's probably be for the old jalopy type racing where blowing out dirt every time they hit the gas. But as long as they keep expanding and bringing more business and then brings in more revenue, and I guess only living over here 3 blocks away, I very rarely hear them.
Do you think there's any betting going on?
Sure.
On the vehicles? Any betting going on?
Not legally.
No. Not legally.
Is there any way to track, Chair Lewis talked about bringing in revenue. Is there any way to track to see if they're bringing any revenue to Green Cove, the downtown Green Cove?
I guess the question is talk to the business owners, and we have a business owner here. Do they see an increase on the weeks that the driveway is here?
I definitely see increased traffic, not notably on the cafe side of things. Probably our fault for not advertising enough over there. But yeah, I put the blame on us. I think that it could actually have a pretty big impact on us, but I'm not there on Saturday morning, so I don't see it. I know that the kids do see it a little bit. But no, I think if anything, you know, obviously our service stations, filling stations, I know all of our, I do a lot of automobile business, and I'm always got my car in and out of some of the shops around here, Abner's shop up there and all this kind of stuff, and I know that their shops are full of people tuning cars, doing stuff like that. Everybody's talking about buying a car. I mean, so it has a pretty substantial impact. And like I said, the only reason why I don't think we've seen a substantial impact on our business is we just haven't got out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but we're in the process of trying to do something that's going to get us out there all over the place. But it's another project.
For your coffee shop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to do some little pop-up cafes at different events and stuff.
Yeah. They withdraw the site plan because they're four-year lease? Is that
well, no, it was really staff's recommendation to go from, they originally submitted a site plan, the normal site plan application.
Mm-hmm.
But in what we do as staff is we have, site plan is a technical review, which means that we have to look at a site plan against our code. And our code requires, as I said, the landscaping requirements and parking, and it requires underground utilities. We have to have water and sewer, serves public utilities, you know, and they use portlets. I mean, you know, it's just a different operation. So we could not have approved it as a development, because our code requires that you have everybody ties to the central water and sewer system. Everybody has to have underground utilities. Everybody's got to meet our landscaping and parking requirements. But a special event, like we've had, and we created it really for Reynolds Park, the major, because you have to have a minimum of 10 acres, originally for, I think it was a ham jam was our original when we wanted to have that here. We used it for the light show. We've used it for and allows for numerous events. And he gave all the days and his estimated number of people, because that's what it's for. It's good for economic development for our community. Like you said, if somebody in Tampa's hearing about it, then they'll come to it. They're coming and they're buying coffee or gas or something that's going to help our community.
This has only been less than 6 months that it's been in existence. And you go to the like the military museum, been here for years. next year they're most likely going to a 2-day event, because it was really crowded there this year. And they had an awful lot of people down there, and next year they say they're going to have a bivouac area that people go out and live like the soldiers did back during World War II, if they really want to. But it's be more of a lifelike experience. And that seems to be growing very well. So I would figure it'd take 2 or 3 years, and this track will probably start getting more national attention instead of just state attention. Because once they start getting the national attention, just like the military museum, they've got half tracks and small tanks and everything coming in from Alabama and Georgia to go down to the military museum. So if they do the same thing with the track and gets everybody inspired, you start getting all these cars in from around the country.
Yeah, on my behalf, I've been involved in like the cars and that kind of thing. I got friends who do the autocross all over, and they've traveled, you know, Georgia, Alabama, different places doing them, because that's how we used to have to go to do it. And I didn't know very many facilities that have. I've never heard of a facility that has all that in one spot.
And they have to rotate at different times, because they said that people are different people. That's what Mr. Scapola told me.
See that?
Yeah.
It's impressive. When I saw when I opened this up last week, and I saw the site plan of all the different activities and stuff, there was at least 2 or 3 on there that I hadn't even heard of yet that he had done. I mean, I've heard of them, but I didn't know that they were that was in the plans for this place too. I was like, that's
And we asked them. They have not done all these. We said, put down what you might do, so you don't have to keep coming back to us. This allows them to do any of these things over time.
A year long special event.
Right.
That's what they've been approved for.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the specific dates that they propose.
Yeah. I might open up a
special event year long. That's right.
Well, I'm just curious, aren't there a lot of these in a lot of towns?
Not really. He had a very successful one in South Florida, I think in Miami or that. It's just because you have to have that land area, paved land area to do it. And
the closest 8-mile track is like Valdosta.
Oh, really?
South Florida has one.
Yeah.
There's not many places around that could
you've got
accommodate.
A small track in Tampa and one south of Tampa, but those are only about 2-mile tracks, and it brings a different breed of racer. But they've been there for 30, 40 years. You know, they originated from the moonshine.
Yeah.
Any more comments?
I have one question, if I might. Jennifer, you might want to just ask the port how long their lease is, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, there was in the council agenda, They did provide us their lease. I don't think I provided it. And, yeah, it's an annual. It's up to 4 years. But after the first year, they can be basically pulled the plug every year.
The port can. Okay. Yeah. Because if they had a 4 year lease, you'd almost have to say, well, now, wait a minute.
Yeah. One year lease or four year lease? It's like up to four, but every year. So it really, you know, because the port, you know, like I said, that's why they did the MURP. They really want to, the family wants to sell it out. But meanwhile, you've got property there and you want to make some money off of it. It's basically a business investment, but that's why they don't want to put any, you know, major investment in there.
That use may be incompatible with what they ultimately do.
Yes.
Not they, but whoever the property owner is, 5, 10, 20 years down the road, might very well be, you know, incompatible.
And basically what I'm seeing, because we've gotten a couple other minor developments that are coming through there, what's coming in there is reuse of existing facilities or what I call temporary facilities, i.e., we just got a site plan in for a on J. Lewis in front of Westside Forest Products. They've been using a Quonset hut and a little trailer, is the best way of saying it. Now they're going to move in a bigger manufacturer building. And all these things are things that if they sold the property, they would be booted and it wouldn't be a big deal, you know. So.
Okay. Item number three, the update on annexation.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of get you in the loop of the Planning and Zoning Board as we go forward, because if some of these annexations move forward, they're going to have to come to you through land use changes and zoning changes. You got provided a map. We've got them up on the overhead as well as there's a map in front of you, a larger map. And basically what we did is staff went to the City Council back on in August with, and I'm going to go, hopefully you can hear me do it. Went to with this map, and we basically gave some priority areas. Okay. We did part, which aren't shown on this map, but basically we said, okay, we did two things. This color here, and you can see it in the yellow better, is the existing city limits. The line that's got both purple and melon are areas that are both our water, sewer, and electric service area. Adding to that, and so then the areas that are just, like for instance, the old Gustafson property is in our electric, but not in our water, wastewater. There's some area down 17 that are in our water and wastewater, but not our electric. Majority of the area is the same. And so we looked and we said, okay, if we were to grow and expand and annex, what would make sense? And really looking at the ultimate growth of our water and wastewater areas is something we've been looking at. I think I did a study for the city back in like 2005. Because the problem we have from a planning perspective is we have to provide services, but we don't have the land use control. So when we're planning development, we're getting after the fact instead of knowing what the land uses are. So that's one reason from a planning perspective that we look at annexation. And the other is that we feel we have better, we can control our borders better, and we can serve our citizens better, we can serve our utility customers better when we can provide all their services. So what the council gave us direction, and they basically said, look in this area there were three areas we looked at. What we call the enclave areas, which are kind of little areas that are almost all surrounded by city limits. We looked at that area. We looked down here because we own some of that property down by Gustafson. And then to secure our borders on the east side, we looked over in this area. We're only going through what we call voluntary annexation, and the statute allows, Florida statutes will allow voluntary and involuntary annexation, which you do through a referendum. We're not talking, right now we're only doing voluntary. So what we, staff has been doing, based on the direction of council, we've been meeting with property owners. Initially, we met with the bigger property owners, VADCON, Garber, Marlboro Marine, we've talked to St. John's Landing, and we've explained to them what we see as the benefits of being part of the city. Just for your information, if there's they have to pay the city taxes, which are a little bit higher than the county taxes, but then there are certain county taxes, there are certain taxes that if you're in the unincorporated portion of the county that you pay, that if you're in the city, you do not pay. Like there's a formal law enforcement tax. If you're in the county, you pay to help the sheriff. In the city, it's part of your 2.928 mills to pay for the police department. It's about 0.5 of a mill more in taxes that you pay. But on the other hand, if you're in our water and sewer and electric area, in the water and sewer, you pay a 25% surcharge for being in the county and not in our service area. Now, understand, why do you pay that? Because you pay taxes that help pay my salary, Danielle's salary, Jim's salary, everybody that works for the city. Yeah, right, your salary. You know, the building that's for our operation to run it. So those people, you know, we provide services for our utility customers. There has to be some benefit, and statute allows, Green Coast Springs, not unique, that you can charge up to 25% as like a bump to people that live in your, that you provide that aren't in your city limits. It's a fairness to the people that live in your city limits. So there's that, and then there's also some electric utility tax differences, about 4% that you pay if you're in the county that you don't pay in the city. And we have done an analysis and talked to individuals. Then back, I think it was on May 10th or 12th, whatever the Monday night is, we had a meeting at the police department, new building, where we invited the people in the Gator Bay, Traverse Road, Governor's Creek, whatever, that area that's right outside of Magnolia Point, that subdivision, and we invited all the residents there to kind of talk about that area. They're on our city's water system. And after that meeting, we basically created on the city's webpage under my development services department a page that's called Annexation, where we have this map. We have a PowerPoint presentation that I presented to the residents that kind of goes over what we feel are the benefits of being in the city. Also does a tax analysis. They take a tax bill of somebody, shows them what the difference is in the taxes, takes that certain, and I just picked an address. I really didn't pick anybody in particular. Picked that same address as water, sewer, electric bill, and just showed the difference. You know, obviously, houses assess more, you use more electricity, you use more water, I mean, but it's a guide. And it basically showed that for between $100 to $200, depending, you know, you basically would be in the city. That would be your ultimate cost. But with that, you would go from, you know, you'd get the police protection and other services that the city provides, such as, you know, street lights, because we'd have to provide them the same services that we provide our citizens. So that information has been floated out, and we're just working slowly to see what the community wants. There's been a lot of misinformation out there. I don't know if any of you have heard about it, and that's another reason why I want to let you know that, you know, it has gone to council. We're working on the directing council, but we're also very cognizant that it is a voluntary effort at this point in time. And also, as what you see in your handbook, we're going to have to give an analysis to the council. If we decide to take in a property, we're going to have to show what it's going to cost the city to take it in, and that's going to have to be a business decision from the council's perspective. We also, in the benefit, we're telling people that if they come in while we're reaching out to you, we would eat the cost of a land use and zoning change that you would normally have to pay. Normally, when you come into the city, you would have to pay this cost. Now, we have waived that, that's been a common thing the city has waived, I would say. I know we waived those land use and zoning costs for the 90 acres that we did for off of Energy Cove Court, and I'm pretty sure we did it when the property came in at 16 and 17, the Huntley area, the corner there. All Star. when they first came in. Then they had to, they come back, they wanted one thing, and then later they came back and changed it. They had to pay for that second time. But so that's, we're not doing anything different than we've provided in the past. So, and anyway, so that's where we're at. As we just wanted to kind of keep you in the loop of what you're doing. On that map, as you can see, the orange is the First Coast Outer Beltway, which is renamed. It's now the First Coast Outer, First Coast Expressway. That's what the new name of it is. And that's progressing ahead. And if you see, we've also used that as an indicator where we feel our limits should be as we move forward. And it's just, you know, you got to have a vision. You got to have a plan in order to move forward. So it's really, you know, just for information because you're out and about, plus as we move forward with these annexations, they're going to come before you for the land use and zoning changes.
How did the property owners, the big business owners, respond when you...
We've been very I've been positive. They've all been positive. They're kind of, if you think government moves slow, big businesses move slower, I think. This is obviously not high on their priority list, even though we show some of them substantial savings. But, you know, they've all got different issues, but they're all saying, you know, give us a little more time. We're moving this way. So I'm hoping that in August we'll start getting some of these come back in. They've, you know, Garber, if you notice, they've gone through expansion. They're renovating their building, which it looks great. But, you know, the general manager's been dealing with that every day. And so this is not, you know, and he's got partners in Detroit, you know. So it's not. Same with Marlboro Marines. Our family is a family-owned business, and the CEO, the ones that runs it, he says, it takes them a year to make a decision. And he told us from day one. He says, I know they're going to do it. It's just going to take some time. They have real issues because they're on the water there, people coming into their property from the water.
Who are you talking about?
Marlboro Marine.
Oh, okay. What are the advantages to the city? I mean, obviously increased taxes, but...
Increased taxes, land use controls, from my perspective as a planner, is a major thing.
Land use control?
Yeah, is that's where we can control what's happening there. A good example is if you remember the asphalt plant, which was at the southern end of the Gustafson property. It's going to we had neighbors that came to our community because one of the access to it is up 15A that comes right through Oak Ridge, you know, where that community up on 16. But we're going to get the impact, but we don't have any other than, you know, I went to the county and said, hey, we've got some issues and you need to look at buffering and you need to look at access, and we talked to it, but we're just like a neighbor when it comes to that issue. While if it was in the city, then we would be the one negotiating with the property owner, not to say we wouldn't want that asphalt plant, but making sure that maybe they improve 15A or whatever. And I'm just throwing these ideas out, but we don't have that. They impact our community, that will, but it's, we don't have any control of it. And that's just one example of something that's happened in the last couple of years. Or I guess it was about a year ago, they got a lot of press.
Yeah, I've heard comments from people that they think the annexation is going to be 2 or 3 years from now. And I said, no, the plan is a 40-year until 2040. It's proposed of what we'd like to see by 2040. It might happen in less time if people voluntarily and say, let's do this. That would be quicker and easier and no problem. But the urban boundary is city limits. So basically, the up to the year 2040.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious how this happened at Harbor Road there, that little industrial area.
I'll let Jim go because I wasn't involved in that.
How did that, we don't provide that water there, it's only electricity.
I really don't recall that. Of course, that's not in the city.
Well,
you're talking about
on the north
side of Harbor.
It's just so weird,
yeah.
That little
square
right
there, where the development is. Right across the street.
They had to have already, they're served by...
Clay Electric.
Yeah. I mean,
the electric's there. Electric service area only.
No.
Is it that
no,
what that
they're,
is?
They're not our electric, they're our water.
It's not our, okay.
They are water, sewer, not electric.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they were already being served by Clay Electric, and then we had a territorial agreement with them, and
right.
Nobody agreed to really give up much of many of their customers, although there are some provisions for that. In the annexation agreement, either party can can ask the other party. Green Cove could ask them, they could ask us to take over someone if it begins to make more sense to do that, but I don't think that's really happened very much so far.
Did you speak?
It's just strange, you know, that this one little, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Did we speak with any of the owners going west?
I mean, going out to like west of Magnolia?
Not,
we really haven't yet. That's kind of, that's a far, like I said, the council gave us priorities and that's a farther down priority. Because a lot of it, we squared off our borders on 315 because we own Magnolia, because Magnolia West is in the city, but none of that area is in our water and sewer service area, so that's why it's a lower priority. That's not to say it won't happen, but, you know. And the benefit to a property owner is that if they can get high, most of those people are on well and septic tank, so if they were wanting to redevelop their property, they can get higher densities with water and sewer. It's to the advantage, depending on how much acreage they own. And the other thing, a misinformation that's out there, is whether you're in the city or not, if you are on a well or septic tank and you start having failures, especially in septic tanks, especially when you're close to the river, and there is water lines, or I mean, there are sewer lines close to you, DEP and the health department is not going to give you a permit for a new septic tank. They're going to require you to connect. So just because you're in the county doesn't mean that you could not be required to become on a public, whether it's us or Clay, utilities, be connected. That's just state statute because of a health reason. And the same thing with, if you know, well, so, but that's a misnomer. And yet on the other hand, if you're in the city and you have a working well and septic tank, we're not going to say, oh, you're now in the city, now you've got to connect. I mean, it's the services have to be there, and that's part of the city's analysis, is to make sure we bring somebody in, can we afford the, will the tax base increase offset the utility if there's any, or any infrastructure improvements we need to make in that community.
And First Coast Outer Beltway is now called Expressway.
First Coast Expressway, yes.
Okay, do we have more discussion? Any comments? Staff comments?
Just want to let you know a couple of things. First of all, we were having, as you know, our last meeting, we talked about community redevelopment the area. We had this, Danielle and I went to the what they call the studio presentation, where the students came and and we went to their studio, went to UF's campus, and the students presented their plan. I have a copy of it, but I just started reading. I finally got a copy of it, but it was excellent. Their visuals that they presented to us, they spent a lot of work and had a lot of good ideas. And so it is going to be presented to the council at a special workshop on the 17th. Before their council meeting at 5:30, so any of you are welcome to come. Hopefully I can set it up like we did the studio, where they're actually going to be set up. They've kind of set up the different tables and their ideas, and they've got maps and et cetera. So it should be interesting. Hopefully we've got some of the students that will come that will actually present it. If not, we'll have Laura Biedenbach will definitely be here, and I think one of the professors. So they did a good job. They all really liked Green Coast Springs, and I think we'll be impressed with what they're recommending. So that'll be then.
We've been invited all the county officials as well, and I didn't tell Janice this because I just found out, but Mark Scrooby said he's already got it on his calendar, and he'll be here. So we have to convince the county. It's discretionary, and you probably already know that, but it's totally discretionary with the county whether they let us do community redevelopment agency.
Charter county, because we are a charter
under
county.
Florida law, yeah, they have all the authority. And they'll have to be convinced that it's worthwhile, which I think they will be, what I think I'm going to hear from the presentation. And then from a tax standpoint, that they don't really lose a lot in the form of taxes. And I think they'll be convinced of that, I hope.
When is that?
The 17th at 5:30. So it's a special council workshop for them to test out. So
I think y'all would all enjoy it.
I think so. I mean, it's they were really they did a good job. We were very impressed. That week I was like so nervous because I'm like thinking like, I've got it, this is funded by a grant. I've got to get the grant to the state by July 1st. And what if they, and this was like the last week in April, what if they totally bomb the plan? I think I'm going to be busy for the next month, but they did a great job. We were both, Danielle and I, were very impressed with what they did. So.
I was supposed to be there, and I regretted I couldn't make it. He reached out to me and wanted me to be there.
Yeah. But they got, like, it's a good idea. So hopefully, you know, I mean, it's a plan, but it's something you got to work towards, and it's got a different eye, so I think it's good. The other thing is on this week's agenda, we put an RFP out for the reuse of the old police building. We got one response. We've got a recommendation going to council for the council to recommend that we start talking to the person. So that's on the June 3rd agenda. And a couple of you, I just handed you your financial disclosure. I guess some of them were sent here. Some of them you should be getting them, I guess, at your house. They're due
July 1st.
$5
a day fine after that if you don't.
Yeah. It takes about 2 seconds, so just do it either. And drop it in the mail or email it or drop it off here. We'll make sure you get it. Actually, you can just drop it. Supervisor Lexi gets it because that's who does it. I get mine from Duval because I live in Duval. Even I work, it's related to Clay. I was like wondering why I got it from Duval last year, but anyways, which is kind of interesting. It's state, and it's a state form, so, but it's based on where you live. So anyways, but yes, please get it in. That's a requirement to make sure you're not getting those big bucks from developers for paying you. Yeah, for your salary. So anyways, and that's it. But our next meeting would be June 26th. I think we should have a special exception coming forward, so we should have an action item, at least one or two, based on discussions that I've had.
Action item.
Yeah, I know. It's alcohol. It could be a real action item, but anyway. But no, I think hopefully it'll. But anyways, so it's moving forward. Magnolia Point Phase 8, we had a pre-construction. They are moving dirt. I'm sure if you lived out there, I'm sure you're happy. But anyways, that's moving along, so it's. Where things are happening. We issued, because I do my monthly, and if you look at the council agenda, I do a monthly report to the council. And in April, we issued 6 new house permits in Magnolia Point. So, and I think we had about 6 new COs in the same month. So that means things are happening. So, you know, it's good. That's what expands our tax roll. So, anyway.
Yes, tonight is the Village Improvement Association Beautification Awards. And they do it every year. It's at 7 o'clock at the VIA building, which is 17 Palmetto Street. And different entities, different groups around the city are invited to nominate a dwelling or a site or home or business that's either improved or keeping the beautification going. So we're all invited to go to that. And then on the historical note, from the Historical Society, we're going to nominate the police station, the new police station, for keeping the Mediterranean-style design for the heritage of Green Coast Springs, because that's been our heritage. One of the history designs goes along with our new City Hall. So I'd like to invite y'all. After the award ceremony, they'll have refreshments. People always like that.
Can you tell us who's nominated?
Well, I came from the Historical Society.
No, for the beautification.
Oh, well, for the Historical Society, each entity does their own.
Oh,
so
okay.
The rest of them they kind of save for a surprise. But for the history group, we're doing the police station for the Mediterranean style design, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, because they just did preservation on their stained glass windows, and actually the VIA themselves, because they've never received an award, and every year every year they host it, but they never received it, so we're going to honor them this year for it.
That's nice.
Yeah. I know Lisa's
getting one for her bathhouse. She's had a good job of renovation.
Yeah, she keeps
that
up real nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the rest of them were kind of kept secret until, you know, it's like a surprise, so it's 7 o'clock.
We won't tell.
I'm the couple first.
I'm good.
You're good? Okay, I guess that's about all. If nobody else has any more comments, then we'll adjourn at 5:45.
good thing. Have excellent.
You can keep that.